This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 20th, 2019, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on our show, First Tee Northwest Arkansas introduces young people to golf while emphasizing healthy behaviors and habits. On today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report, we'll be introduced to the new executive director of First Tee. His conversation with Paul Gatling about how his for-profit background will serve him in his new job in our second half hour. Plus, a quick introduction to six musicians playing all over Northwest Arkansas during Artisphere. And stay with 91.3 for tonight's live broadcast of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra from the Great Room at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The annual Mozart in the Museum concert heard live on KUAF at 8 tonight, after the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. And after this afternoon version of our show, stick around for Here and Now. Tony Hale is known for playing neurotic characters like Buster in Arrested Development and Gary in Veep. Now he has a new role as Spork in the latest Toy Story movie. Here and Now from NPR begins at 1 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. Changes in the global recycling market are being felt on the University of Arkansas campus. The university's primary recycling broker recently notified staff it's no longer economically viable to accept some of the school's recycling. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Mark Rushing, the Assistant Vice Chancellor of University Relations, about how the U of A plans to handle the news. They started the conversation with an explanation of how the campus recycling program has worked up until now.
Up until this point, we have various bins around campus. Usually you'll see four bins, one for white paper, one for mixed paper, including cardboard. There's a bin for trash, of course. And then there's also a bin that has included aluminum and steel cans, plastics, and glass. So this is the recycling setup, I would say, for a large part of campus. It involves all of the facilities that are operated through E&G funds or education general funds, and Razorback Recycling covers a large part of the campus. I would go so far as to say a majority of campus has the four bins set up.
So that current system has been impacted by some news from one of the university's recycling vendors. Can you tell us what happened?
Sure. So the vendor for those E&G buildings on campus let us know, I guess, a little over a week ago now that it no longer had a market for the commingled recycling. And due to that, they were taking some of that commingled product and disposing of it as it would other waste products. They originally stored it, hoping that the market situation, they would find a home and a buyer for that, but apparently they could not. And so since January of this year, that commingled part, they've been disposing of as they would other trash. Did not affect the white paper and the mixed paper and cardboard recycling on campus. That's continued as normal and is continuing as normal now.
What's going to be the university's plan going forward in this case with the recycling that's been affected by this?
Razorback Recycling and the university and facilities management, sustainability office, everyone is looking at the situation, working with the vendor, basically trying to exhaust all options, because obviously the university remains committed to recycling as much of our waste as possible. This is a big blow. It's not something that is just a campus or a Fayetteville issue. I mean, it's a global issue right now. that especially certain types of plastics, those plastics number 3 through number 7, there's currently just not a market for those. It originates, we believe, from China's decision last year to ban imports of multiple types of solid waste, including those mixed plastics. And so that's really affected the global market in this area. And without a home for those plastics, it creates a problem because we don't have a separate bin that just for number 3 through 7, and then other types of plastics or cans or glass, they're all mingled together. In the short term, can we find a way to recycle our cans and number 1 and 2 plastics and separate what is not what our vendor cannot find a market for, to avoid any of that, or as much as possible, that recycling being disposed of? And so right now the university is looking into paying additional processing fees to have our recycling sorted so that we can recycle as much as possible.
And what about a long-term plan?
Long-term, we're going to look at all options this summer and to try to determine what is the most appropriate next step forward into recycling as much of our waste on campus as we possibly can. And we hope to be able to do that, to make some more final decisions, and then start to, if changes are in order, if signage changes are in order, or we need to educate campus about a different way of recycling or using our bins on campus, then we'll hope to put that together and start to create communication and education about that as we head into the fall. But really at this stage, again, just finding out about the situation a little over a week ago, we're sort of in the assessment phase, looking at all possible options before we make any final decisions.
And in the midst of all this, the university does have sustainability goals that it's set for itself already. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. Razorback Recycling has done a lot. They've recycled more than 10,000 tons, if you can believe that, of materials since the program started in 1991. So that's the equivalent of 20 million pounds of recycling. But the university is not satisfied. We've set goals to reach a 50% diversion of our solid waste from landfills just in a few years, and then to a 90% diversion from landfills by 2040. So that seems like a long way off, but in terms of the amount of recycling and sort of the education and changing of our habits, it's not a lot of time, a little over 20 years away to reach those kinds of goals. It's going to take an effort not only from Razorback Recycling, working with our vendors, working with the Office of Sustainability, but frankly, some of it is also, we're going to have to react to the global markets and how recycling changes and what we can and can't recycle. There's some situations that we have to look at as a campus, as a region, as a state, as a nation, and as a planet, to think about what's most helpful to our environment moving forward.
Well, thank you for filling us in on the situation on campus.
You bet.
That was Mark Rushing, the Assistant Vice Chancellor of University of Arkansas Relations, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek. Rushing says not all of the school's recycling efforts have been affected. Housing and Razorback Athletics work with separate recycling vendors. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art has acquired 60 pairs of colorblind glasses to increase museum accessibility for colorblind guests. The glasses can help some colorblind patrons see new colors and details when looking at the artwork. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The new glasses premiered earlier this month with the opening of Color Field, an outdoor exhibition featuring large, colorful sculptures. While they're still relatively new, Kim Kroll, senior museum educator and accessibility coordinator, says guests have responded positively to the glasses.
For one guest who tried on the glasses, he said that he saw colors that he didn't know the names for, which is, I feel, really impactful. This has definitely been able to let those who are colorblind experience the museum in a new way. And I think what better place to try out these types of glasses than in a museum setting.
According to the National Eye Institute, as many as 8% of men and 0.5% of women with Northern European ancestry have the common form of red-green color blindness. Kroll says the museum was able to acquire the glasses thanks to a gift from a generous colorblind donor who wanted the museum to make the collection more accessible. She says accessibility is important.
It's important just so that we're making sure to welcome all to our museum setting. It's once we invite people from various backgrounds, people with various abilities, I think it's a great opportunity for us to learn more about each other and to create a more inclusive community in general.
The glasses are made by Enchroma. Based in Berkeley, California, the company rolled out its color accessibility program at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe, New Mexico in May. Previous partnerships include Chabot Space and Science Center and the California Academy of Arts and Sciences. CEO and co-founder Andrew Schmieder calls the incident that led to the glasses creation a happy accident. During an Ultimate Frisbee game in 2002, co-founder Don McPherson wore a pair of specialty eyewear he invented to protect the eyes of surgeons performing laser surgery.
And he gave the glasses to a friend, and the guy puts them on, and he goes, "Oh, my God, I can see the cones." I said, "What do you mean you can see the cones?" Well, it turned out his friend was severely colorblind, and he had a hard time seeing the orange sort of field marking cones against the background of green grass. And these glasses enhanced his color vision in such a way that it made the cones pop out and then he could see them.
McPherson applied for a grant from the National Institutes of Health to explore why his glasses helped colorblind people better see colors. He partnered with Andrew Schmieder, a UC Berkeley-trained mathematician, and the duo spent years perfecting the lens technology to create Enchroma glasses. The key, Schmieder says, is understanding how an eye with colorblindness sees differently. He describes the problem as spectral overlap.
Normally in the eye, cones consist of three sort of broad categories of light that they respond to, red, green, and blue. In the eye of someone who's colorblind, there's a genetic substitution that affects either the red or the green cones, such that the frequencies of light that they respond to is shifted over so that it becomes more overlapping with its neighbors.
For example, Schmieder says in the eye of someone with a form of red-green color blindness called protan color blindness, the red information channel of color is contaminated by receiving too much green light.
Later in the visual system, the nerves, they do special comparisons between like red and green to determine what color something is. And then it makes those comparisons more difficult because they're getting like the same information. So the way that the Enchroma glasses work is through what's called a selective spectral filtering. So it removes a very narrow portion of the light that occurs where the overlap is at its maximum. And by removing that light, ultimately, the eye is able to receive signals that are better differentiated between red and green.
Schmieder says people who have used their glasses for a couple of years have told them they feel their overall color vision has improved.
Not just when they're wearing the glasses, but now in other situations, they feel more confident in seeing and identifying colors. And I think that's kind of interesting. That kind of points to a potential, you know, long-term learning effect that could be there.
However, he stresses these glasses are not a cure for color blindness.
We classify them as an optical assistive device that can enhance your color vision and color discrimination, but it doesn't necessarily solve every situation in life that may come up for a colorblind person. you know, for example, specifically there's a number of jobs that people may be excluded from, and our product cannot be used at this point in time in those occupations.
While the glasses may not be able to help all colorblind museum patrons, they should be able to enhance the experience for some. Crystal Bridges guests can check out indoor or outdoor glasses that are sized for children or adults. There is also one fit-over pair that is designed for patrons who wear regular glasses. Enchroma glasses can be customized for prescription, and there are more than 200 eye care professionals around the world who carry the product. More information is available at enchroma.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The Fort Smith Museum of History is throwing it back to the 1960s and 70s with a new temporary exhibit that starts today. It's called Art by the People, for the People, and features over 30 blacklight posters published by a company called The Third Eye. That company was founded and run by Poto High School graduate and current resident Roberta Bell and her husband.
Blacklight posters are posters that are printed with fluorescent ink. They turn to light sources when you shine ultraviolet light on them, long-wave ultraviolet that's not dangerous.
The two met in New York City after Bell had attended the universities of Mexico City and Kansas, where she studied silversmithing and painting.
And we went traveling around the world a little bit. We bought land in Missouri, and we found a black light, which we didn't really know what it was, and the little paints that I had bought in Brazil started to glow. So I started my first little experimentation with the colors. The colors had been around since the 20s. They were used in vaudeville. They used black lights, and they could illuminate their hands or their feet or whatever as they were dancing. But they had gone out of fashion.
But Bell and her husband brought the colors back and turned them into posters.
They really don't mix according to the laws of color physics, where you mix a blue and a red and you get a purple. You might mix a fluorescent blue and a fluorescent red and get gray, you know. So it's very difficult to work with.
The couple established the first company to manufacture and distribute blacklight posters in New York City and ended up publishing about 100 blacklight prints while they were in business.
We were very kind of a dynamic company of young persons, and I hired some artists to help in the art department, and over the years we became 6 people in the art department.
And they kept growing from there. Eventually, the Third Eye had 85 people working at its headquarters, 100 salespeople across the country, and access to 100 artists. Bell says the posters were appealing because of their subject matter, which included everything from geometric shapes to landscapes to Marvel comic heroes. But they were also priced for the people. The posters retailed for about $2.
So anyone could enjoy them, and they did. And we're finding now that they're still on the internet, and we've bought a few back on the internet. We've discovered that they've kept these posters for 45 years, and some of them are in very good condition coming in, and others are just, they've just been loved to death. They're just like dish rags. But we love the fact that people are still, they still love them.
The Third Eye went out of business in 1973, along with thousands of other businesses, during the oil crisis that led to a recession marked by gas shortages and inflation. You can see the posters from Bell's private collection at the Fort Smith Museum of History through August 24th. Bell will also speak this evening at the exhibit opening at 6 p.m.
Drummin' in the Park takes place this summer at the Basin Spring Park in downtown Eureka Springs. The event is free and open to the public every fourth Saturday of each month, from 5 to 7 p.m. through September. Drums and noise are welcome. Go to eurekasprings.org for more information.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents the 2019 Forest Concert Series with events each Saturday in June and July. This musical performance series merges national and local acts in the museum's North Forest, where visitors can enjoy live music and dancing under the forest trees and surrounded by art installations by Dale Chihuly and others. CrystalBridges.org for tickets and information.
More than 800 acres of land in Carroll County is now owned by a Missouri-based mining company. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Chuck Braswell, fourth-generation Carroll County resident, purchased acreage in the Kings River Valley 25 years ago to build his dream homestead. He says it's now at risk.
I had come home and discovered that a bulldozer had come up my drive and actually had dozed some trees down along the edge of my property and gone through the dividing fence line that separates my property from this property in question.
Braswell lives next to a 622-acre parcel sold and repurchased in sections late last year by Matthew Mills, a principal of 60 West, a private equity firm which invests in natural resource development. Mills operates Legacy Land Holdings, LLC, headquartered in Dexter, Missouri. Braswell filed a complaint and was contacted by Legacy's mining consultant, Scott Moore.
We met later on that afternoon, and he had another gentleman with him that I found out was a geologist who had flown in from, I believe, Dallas. And we stood down there talking on my place, and he, Scott Moore, had apologized about the fact that they had done that and said they didn't mean to do it.
Braswell says Moore assured him he would repair the property damage,
which has turned out to be not the case. And then also, as time went by, and to this day, nobody has ever showed back up to do what he said they would do.
Braswell says the men would not divulge why they had built the road, so he queried the realtor who brokered the property sale.
I said, is this a mining, you know, thing? And I said, you know, I'm thinking fracking and all this kind of stuff, you know, and oh, no, you know, nothing like that. And, the word conservancy is exactly the word that he used.
The realtor, Braswell says, was told by Legacy that it was about conservation easements. Turns out Legacy Mining had placed conservation easements on several parcels surrounding a historic working limestone quarry it had purchased in Elk Ranch, north of Eureka Springs, called Ozark Southern Stone Company. The quarry is situated on Leatherwood Creek, a tributary to the White River in northern Carroll County. Conservation easements don't preclude the development of resources necessarily. But in an email correspondence for this report, Matt Mills, who declined talking on tape, says he was advised by market analysts to expand mining in other places in Carroll County to better penetrate the national dimensional limestone market, block limestone. Mills is currently conducting exploratory test drilling on lands purchased in the Kings River Valley, adjacent to Chuck Braswell's place. The Kings River Watershed Partnership has worked for decades to educate the public on preserving and protecting the river, classified as an extraordinary water resource. Treasurer Mike Fitzpatrick.
Therefore, we are simply taking the position of advising anybody that is interested about the possible consequences of a dramatic change in the watershed, such as the quarry that is being discussed. And our position is that this would be a dramatic, damaging event that could cause irreparable harm for generations to come.
Marty Johnson, Carroll County Quorum Court Justice of the Peace for Winona, Polo, and Kings River Districts, says he first learned about Legacy a few weeks ago, and it turned out to be a subject of a Berryville Quorum Court meeting on June 17th.
We had standing room only in the Quorum Court, and many of the property owners were there, and several of them spoke up about what was going on. And they're just concerned about the quality of life and the ecosystem and everything goes along with the rock quarry. Heavy traffic on the roads, you know, industrial traffic and such as that.
The steep and winding county road descending into the Kings River Valley is used by local farmers, residents, and thousands of tourists who fish and float the river. By request, Carroll County Clerk Connie Doss provided us a copy of the County Land Use Code, which primarily concerns federal and state regulatory control over private property. The county doesn't employ a robust planning board to oversee rural development and zoning either. The Nature Conservancy owns 6,000 acres, a preserve along the Kings River, adjacent to Legacy Mining property. In an email for this report, Associate State Director Tim Snell wrote, "Mining in the watershed must be limited to conserve the environment, recreation, and water quality downstream." On June 5th, the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality investigated a series of citizen complaints towards Legacy Mining's road construction and test drilling operations in the Kings River Valley, which require no permit. Still, ADEQ cited Legacy for violating federal and state clean water laws. In an email, owner Matt Mills says they're in the process of repairing the breach. Mills has not submitted a request to ADEQ to quarry in the Kings River Valley yet, but a Freedom of Information Act request to ADEQ reveals that Legacy Mining last October submitted 5 notices of intent to expand limestone quarry operations in the tiny community of Elk Ranch, just east of Beaver, starting this July, which ADEQ has authorized, pending final approval by the Water and Air Divisions. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Tonight, the Mozart in the Museum concert will be live on our air beginning at 8. Every year, as part of the Artisphere Festival, the Artisphere Festival Orchestra performs a concert at Crystal Ridge's Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Tonight's concert will be live on KUAF with host Katie Henriksen beginning at 8. The 6 members of Seraph Brass are also part of the festival. This week, they performed at St. Paul's Episcopal Church as part of the Artisphere Chapel Music Series. Later this month, they'll be part of performances with the Artisphere Festival Orchestra at Walton Arts Center. This morning, the 6 women and Seraph Brass generously performed for us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Sounds from inside our Furman Garner Performance Studio this morning. Seraph Brass, Rachel Volvekas, Rachel Semioa, Gretchen Renshaw James, Jean Lawrence, Hannah Belogovitz, and Mary Elizabeth Bowden. That's this morning inside Furman Garner Performance Studio. They also sat down to talk with us today, and we'll hear parts of their conversation on our shows throughout the month. We did want to share part of the conversation today. The 6 musicians live all over the country and perform together and with other ensembles all over the world. Gretchen Renshaw James, tuba player for Seraph, is a University of Arkansas graduate and director of bands applied low brass at Hendricks College. While a student at the U of A, she helped backstage during Artisphere performances, and she says part of the mission for Seraph Brass is to champion women composers and women artists.
One of our goals, part of our mission, is to support women composers. We are women brass players, and we still come from an underrepresented demographic in the professional brass playing world. And along with that, one of our efforts is to try to lift up women composers who themselves are generally underrepresented in the world of classical music composition. So we've been really excited to be playing this brass quintet, which we've rearranged as a sextet by Rena Esmail, because she brings some really interesting flavors from her background being a Hindustani American composer. And we've also commissioned works. Most, if not all, of the commissioned works have been from women composers. So that's a very important part of the mission of this group and something that's important to us as we move forward.
Well, do you think about when you're at St. Paul's or another performance? So you remember being a student and watching that there are young women or girls who are watching who maybe haven't seen, because I grew up in a small town and you didn't get to see live music, let alone live music with brass that often. But you're an inspiration. Do you think about that ever?
Definitely. Some concerts when little girls come up to us and they're almost in tears because they're so excited. I can't even imagine that, because when I was growing up and seeing concerts when I was little, I remember seeing Dallas Brass and Canadian Brass, and they were all male, which is fine. They were my heroes. And I didn't have a female role model until I switched to a female trumpet teacher when I was 14. So I can't imagine the excitement I would have felt if I was 10 years old seeing an all-female brass group. So we definitely are aware of that aspect.
After the concert the other night, this elderly woman came up to me and just said, wow, I just can't believe that you guys are able to do what you do. This would have been unheard of in my era. And it just made me smile so much, because I'm just like, yay, the world is changing.
And
we are being represented better.
To dive deeper into it, to give an example, whenever we're performing in the general Pennsylvania area, or even the surrounding states, there's we have a young girl fan who comes, and her parents will drive her hours to come see a concert. And so recently we've actually invited her up on stage to play a little piece with us.
Yeah.
And we found that to be very inspiring and hope to do more of that.
No big deal. We have groupies.
Seraph Brass visited the Carver Center for Public Radio this morning. You can find out more about them at seraphbrass.com. And we'll hear more from the ensemble on Sunday's edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3. The Artisphere Festival schedule can be found at waltonartcenter.org. And more about tonight's live concert on KUAF from Crystal Ridges just ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
The 2019 Hero Half Marathon is Sunday, October 13th, beginning at 8 a.m. Participants can join Spark Foundation and Fayetteville Firefighters to compete the half, two-person relay, or one-mile fun run alongside firefighters in full bunker gear. Registration and more information are available at HeroHalfMarathon.com. KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2019 Spaceberry Music Festival, July 4th through the 6th on the farm in Eureka Springs. This three-day jam and funk music festival welcomes Forgotten Space, Grateful Dead Tribute, Magic Beans, Arkansas, and more, plus camping, food, and craft vendors. Winners announced on Friday, June 28th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com for registration and more information.
With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Katie Hendrickson, host of Note on KUAF every Sunday through Thursday night at 8. And Katie, tonight, it's a big night.
It's a really fun night for me. I get to host a live broadcast from the Great Hall of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, featuring the Artisphere Festival Orchestra performing Mozart in the museum.
Okay, world-class musicians, world-class museum. It's live. How do you get ready?
How do I get ready? Mostly I'm just excited, honestly. And then I've loved having the opportunity. So some of the orchestra folks I've gotten to know pretty well. And then I love getting excited about hearing the new people who've come into the fold. I'm really excited to hear the Aeolus Quartet. The Dover Quartet has played so much with Artisphere. They have a concert actually in London, so they're not here for this concert. So the Aeolus Quartet, they're serving as principals for this configuration at the Mozart in the Museum broadcast. So that's really exciting too. And there's not really any way to plan anything. It just kind of happens. And also because of Joe Hannigan and Weston Sound, He helps us out with putting together all the sound, making sure it's all going on the radio crystal clear and everything. So I feel really comfortable with that.
So that's happening tonight. The broadcast will start at 8, right after the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. You have in front of you a spreadsheet that also tells of other music that's going to be happening through the rest of Artisphere.
Right. It gets a little bit discombobulating to know because there's so many different performances happening with Artisphere. So I actually have a big roadmap in front of me. So actually, there's two, Friday actually, there's going to be two opportunities for people in Northwest Arkansas to hear members of Artisphere Orchestra. They're doing their Off the Grid concert in Siloam Springs Friday evening with members of Artisphere. And other members of Artisphere are performing at the Trillium Salon Series pop-up concert. It's a block party happening on East 7th Street in Fayetteville from Washington to Willow. That's something that I'm organizing. Then there is a quartet performance by the ALS Quartet at the Hunt Chapel, 2 p.m. Sunday. And then they have their big concerts, their big final two concerts at the Walton Arts Center, Mendelssohn and Brahms concert at Walton Arts Center. That's Wednesday evening. And then their finale concert, which is Saturday. It's all celebrating the moon. So I don't know if you noticed that about the Artisphere this year. They're celebrating the moon, and it's the 60th anniversary 50th. Of the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Because I was alive.
Okay. You're like, I'm not that old yet.
No.
I knew I was like, I'm trying to think of a million things at once. So I was like, wait, when was it?
Yeah, 69.
I didn't do the math. I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So you were not alive when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon.
I was not yet.
Huh. Okay.
I'm just a youngin'. Total youngin'.
All right, so tonight, and who is going to be with you tonight?
Yeah, so the last few years, if you've tuned in, actually the last 2 years, I guess, if you've tuned in and heard the live broadcast from Crystal Bridges, my co-host has been Carl Larson. He's a violist with Artisphere Festival, and he's the point person for all of the pop-up concerts happening, and so it's been great getting to know Carl. Carl has been my point person to talk about figuring out their involvement in the Trillium Salon Series block party, and he has a really great insight because he's actually a traveling music, like he basically travels the country all the time. He'll be like, I'll get in touch with him, and he's like, yeah, I'm doing a recording session for like video game music. Or he just came off of a tour with, I think, Josh Groban. Yeah. He just finished doing a tour with, he was a violist for the big concerts.
Oh,
for
wow.
Yeah, so he's always doing all these kinds of things, and so it's fun to actually touch base with Carl, and also he has insights as a violist and someone who's played in the orchestra.
Join us if you don't have a ticket, and I understand it is sold out.
I think so.
Yeah. If you don't have a ticket, join us right here, 91.3, and we'll be live. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Welcome to another edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Lowell-based financial services agency Central Research is growing. The company has opened a 5,500-square-foot call center at Ozark Center Point Place in Springdale. The call center handles student loan debt collection for the U.S. Department of Education. Central Research President and CEO Scott Dillard said the company opened the office after experiencing continued growth with the federal contract. Since opening a few months ago, the call center has doubled capacity and now employs more than 60 people. And the growth won't stop there. Central Research is planning to open a 12,000-square-foot call center just outside Nashville, Tennessee, later this year. That will add another 95 employees. Nearly 200 people work for Central Research at the company's headquarters in Lowell. Jeff De La Rosa reported those details in the current issue of the Business Journal. To read more, just visit nwabusinessjournal.com. When we come back, I'll introduce you to the new executive director of the First Tee of Northwest Arkansas. You're listening to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report here on Ozarks at Large.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
A few weeks ago, we reported the news that Randy Herbin had been named the new executive director for the First Tee of Northwest Arkansas. Herbin has a broad range of business experience over the past 33 years. He most recently was the CEO of MoxieOx. That's a printing business in Springdale. He was part of an investment group that bought the business in 2012. Herbin dropped by our Springdale studios earlier this week to discuss the new job at the First Tee and what excites him most about a career pivot to the nonprofit world.
Well, one of the businesses we owned was a preschool, and we love kids. And it was amazing when this opportunity came about to positively impact kids through the game of golf. And what an opportunity for us and our family. It's just amazing.
Right. Tell us, how much do you run into, you know, this is an organization that teaches golf. And that's one of the things that you do, but it's also a leadership organization. It's teaching youth skills through educational programs, through, you know, lots of other avenues. How much of that do you run into, and how much do you have to explain to people what the First Tee actually is? The golf is just a small component of it.
That's a great point. And all kids need to develop life skills and learn core values as they're growing and developing as kids and young adults. And doing that through the game of golf is critical. And golf has been great to me, and I've learned a lot. And so it's something that I take pride in. And we have to overcome that obstacle because everybody thinks it's just a golf facility and it's all about golf, but it's all about life.
Right. So yeah, your most recent job, you were at MoxieOx, a company you bought in seven or eight years ago, still remain an owner, but you were the CEO. Now you're the executive director of First Tee. What is your job responsibility as executive director of this nonprofit?
It's crazy. A nonprofit is, you're running a business. Right. And a lot of nonprofits out in Northwest Arkansas and across the country. So having startup experience is critical in the nonprofit world because you're actually operating like a startup company. And so it's really fascinating to see those business skills transfer into a nonprofit organization. And I'm out fundraising, getting the word out, making sure the organization's running well and that the programming is just spot on.
What is a little bit of the history of just the First Tee? The First Tee is an international organization. This is a local chapter. What's the history of the local chapter here in Lowell? I mean, is this the past 10 or 20 years, or how long has it been in existence?
Yeah, it started mid-2000.
Okay.
And what's interesting is I'm reaching out and re-engaging with some of the founding members of the First Tee, and the stories I'm hearing are phenomenal. And they continue to tell me how good the program is, and they got away from a little bit, and I can see the twinkle in their eyes that they want to get back and see the organization do extremely well.
Right. So what do you envision in the future going forward? I mean, you obviously got a big outreach. You reach a lot of kids. What do you envision for this organization going forward?
Great question. We reach about 13,000 to 14,000 kids a year. And so a lot of kids come to our facility and we reach out a little bit. I foresee in the future that our outreach programs are going to be much more significant. That's going to be on our strategic plan to execute on.
Right, what are some of those outreach programs that you're involved with?
So like the Boys and Girls Club of Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. We just had a program there last week. We impacted 15 kids. And we're going to do more of Boys and Girls Club, different schools, et cetera, that we can get out and actively activate with those organizations and have golf as and the first tee as part of their program.
All right. So two sides of it. From the youth side, why should someone be involved in the first tee from those business skills and leadership skills aspect of it? Why should a kid want to be involved in the first tee?
Great question. And we have heard from people who from kids who have gone through the program that when they apply for an internship with an organization, the skills they bring to the table are significant. And one thing we teach, for example, is how to meet and greet other people, right? It's a lost art today. Mm-hmm. And these kids and young adults, when they apply for intern positions, they have good skills of meeting and greeting, shaking hands, looking people in the eye. It's right. A small but big thing.
Right. The soft skills, as was just what I was going to say, are a big thing. All right. Yeah. Now, from a business perspective, from a business leader, from a professional standpoint, why should somebody want to be involved in the first tee? When you're engaging with the business community, why are you selling the first tee as something they need to be involved with?
It's all about kids and young adults.
Herbin said the first tee of Northwest Arkansas will be involved in next week's Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. That's the annual LPGA Tour stop at Pinnacle Country Club. Several first tee members will be walking standard bearers for several groups during the tournament. There will be a putting green for kids next to the ninth green during tournament week, and one first tee member will conduct a 20-minute pre-tournament interview with former University of Arkansas star, now LPGA Tour star, Stacy Lewis. Should be a lot of opportunities to interact with the players for members of the first tee. All right, earlier in the show, we told you about some expansion for Lowell-based financial services agency Central Research. There is also some business growth to report for Bentonville-based Harrison French & Associates, which is already the largest architectural and engineering company in Northwest Arkansas. HFA recently announced it has added surveying to its in-house line of disciplines. Jim Collins, who joined the firm from Sand Creek Engineering in September, will oversee the department, which is starting off initially with a crew of three. Always good to report on growing businesses in our region. If you've got some good news to share about your company, we want to know about it. You can drop me a note anytime at pgatling@nwabusinessjournal.com. And that's all the time we have today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. We'll be back with another edition on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large here on KUAF. Until then, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
It is this time of year, well, it's every time of year, that we seem to be talking a lot about music in Northwest Arkansas. We're going to talk just a bit more about music. Just today, the 2019-2020 West Street Live lineup at Walton Arts Center was announced here, and you can go to waltonartscenter.org and find out more. All of the performances are in Star Theater. Here quickly, the lineup announced today. Nace Brothers Acoustic on October 10th, Martha Redbone November 16th, an acoustic set with Amy Ray January 16th, Tab Benoit February 6th, Bonnie Bishop March 21st, and Jamie Stone's Folklife on May 14th. So that is the 2019-20 West Street Live lineup at Walton Arts Center in the Star Theater that was just announced this morning. Today's show had contributions from Zuzana Sitek, Antoinette Grajeda, and Jacqueline Froelich. Zuzana also provided content about the Fort Smith Museum of History's Blacklight exhibit that has opened up. Timothy Dennis engineered this morning's performance by Seraph Brass, and he also mastered today's show. And don't forget, we'll hear more from Seraph Brass on Sunday's edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal with Paul Gatling is produced by our partners Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. Thanks, Katie Henriksen, for stopping by during one of the busiest days of your year to give us a highlight of the Mozart in the Museum concert. That Mozart in the Museum concert begins tonight at 8 on 91.3. Our theme is titled First Hurrah, and it is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF 91.3, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and West Fork. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kelms. We are going to be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large for Friday. We'll have Michael Tilley from Talk Business to help us review the past week, and Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, to give us a preview of all the things going on this weekend. Antoinette Grajeda curates our end-of-show music for many of our shows. Today, we'll hear another performance recorded just for Ozarks at Large at the Carver Center for Public Radio, Terra Nova Kings performing A Kind Gesture. Terra Nova Kings will be at Bike Rack Brewing in Bentonville Saturday night. More about the band can be found at the Terra Nova Kings Facebook page. More about the venue at BikeRackBrewing.com. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday.
Let me write you a letter, spelling I'm better for you now. We both know words don't matter, only actions will do for you. A kind gesture of laughter dances around you, a fool. Same old masks here on after, downing flasks to breathe fire. If she finds